And then I'm a tobacco prevention specialist, and then I also work for the American Lung Association. So I do wear two hats in the community there.
Cool. Thank you, Michelle. I also have in the studio today our co-host for Youth for Justice.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Moses Salgado, the co-host for Youth for Justice. I'm here with Isaac Hempseed, Michelle, excuse me, I forgot your last
Maury.
Name. Maury. And Blake Hollingsworth. Blake Hollingsworth is our interviewee here, and we're going to be interviewing him about school segregation in Butte County. Chico in particular, but Butte County as a whole as well. Blake, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Blake Hollingsworth. I'm associated with the Chico Peace and Justice Center. I do academic research for them, primarily K-12.
All right, so we got a lot of Youth for Justice news today, interviews, and we'll start with Michelle Maury. So what exactly do you do with the school district?
We run a program, it's called CLEAN, Kids Leading Everyone Against Nicotine. So it's not about showering. I know that gets kind of misconstrued. So we recruit youth in Chico and PV High, and we train, and they're all volunteer students. We take them out of the schools, and we train them on helping us with tobacco policies in the community. So right now we're working on tobacco retail licensing in Chico. So we train them, and their voice is super important because they are targeted by the tobacco industry. So it's very vital that we get them on board with this.
Cool. Is that a program? I don't know if they do that in California or even Chico. Do you all do the shoulder tap things, or you get youth
decoys and
yeah.
stuff? Yeah. I personally don't work with that with this job. The public health, Butte County Public Health Department does that. They don't really have as much funding for it, I know. So with Prop 56, there'll be a lot more of that coming in, which will be really nice. And there'll be a lot more money to do education. But as for the American Lung Association, we have done it up in Paradise. And we just did it once, and we found that they were selling a lot to youth up in Paradise. So that was fun to find out. But it gives us, statistics and local data, which is harder in rural counties to find. So a lot of times people are like, well, what about us up in Paradise? What's going on up there? And so we go and we survey all the stores. And I personally have gone to every single tobacco store up in Paradise and looked at all of them. So I know what's going on up there, as well as I'm active in the community up there and the stores. I mean, at events and stuff. Like, I go to Johnny Appleseed Days and Chocolate Fest and all that fun stuff. So, yeah.
And that's with the
American Lung Association. Okay. Yeah. So, like I said, I wear multiple hats in the community. So it's kind of confusing. I dabble in a lot. But what we find out with youth is that they play a really important role in our just collaboration, and it's kind of hard to find them sometimes. It's really important to get youth involved because they are the future, and it's crazy that they need to have their voice heard. But where are you guys? We need you.
So how and in what way can the youth get involved with your programs?
Well, in Paradise, we are definitely really trying to gain youth partners. It's a little bit harder just because up on the ridge, there's just a little harder to get transportation around with kids and stuff like that. So we found a little bit of a barrier there. But and also just there's so much going on. There might be sometimes people are apathetic about tobacco. It's not really, people don't see it as an issue anymore. They're like, well, the kids aren't smoking that anymore. But they are, especially with vaping nowadays and the flavored tobacco cigarillos that are out there. There's all this stuff out there that they're smoking. So we see it as a problem. And also a good thing about our program is, since we're a national organization and statewide, we have a really good training and really good leadership skills that we can give these kids. So if they're not interested in tobacco, it still gives them the tools that maybe they're interested in something else, but we're training them to talk to city council members. We're training them to talk to community members. We're training them to be aware of the corruption of big tobacco industry and talking about that, because they are very corrupt, and it's kind of waking giving them a kind of an awakening, you know? So it's really important. And if they're not interested in tobacco, it still gives them a good foot in the door to something else. Yeah.
So how old are these kids? What's the youngest that you can, that you do work with, I guess?
We, for the American Lung up in Paradise, we primarily want high school kids. So that's really important. And in Chico, I already have groups of people. I just work in the high school, so that's my other job. And we already have an established group. But we're always looking for more because a lot of our seniors are graduating at Chico High. So, and they could tell you how awesome it is to be in Clean. Again, yeah, there's just so much to do. And so what we teach them is just so valuable. I just, if they want a behavior change in the community, then it goes with policies. And we're teaching them how to, what policies do. So that's really important.
Okay. So I've been starting to substitute teach in the area, but I'm in a lot of elementary schools. Is there like some good messages I should pass on to that age of kids?
We have Clean is involved in middle schools, but not elementary. I personally can't talk for the 2B program, which is a tobacco use prevention education program. But as a community member, I'm speaking now. This is nothing to do with my jobs. I think it is really important to teach young and talk about these kinds of things. But as of now, there isn't any elementary recruitment or anything that we're doing. But I do know that there is a Butte County Office of Education. He goes in, Bruce Baldwin goes into the schools and he does tobacco education lessons. So that's pretty cool. But there's always, there could always be more. Like I said, funding is a big issue.
So do you take donations or is this just a state-sponsored?
A lot of it is funded through like Prop 99 and then now Prop 56. Okay. So that's a lot of programs and we're competitive grantees. So, yeah.
And those props give money to each county?
Yeah, it's distributed. So like Butte County Public Health is going to be the lead organization. They get the most funding. So every county office of health is going to get the most. And then it goes to competitive grantees. Those are the people who write grants and they do certain projects with tobacco. And then afterwards just gets distributed like First Five, which works with under age five, people getting them into school, like Head Start programs. They get funded also by Prop 99, which is tobacco money. So tobacco money doesn't just go to tobacco programs. It goes to other education programs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Prop 99 a new prop or is that been around for a while
okay. Since I just saw a video on this yesterday with my intern. I believe it was passed. It was the first quarter tobacco tax, which was 1989, I believe. So tobacco policy has been around for a while. So you remember back in the day, there was self-service displays of tobacco. There was smoking in restaurants, smoking in airports, smoking in bars, smoking in hospitals. All of that is because people came together and they passed tobacco policy. So it's really important. People don't realize the history that's gone into all this tobacco policy. But a lot of it, like in Chico, we passed smoke-free parks, but not a lot of people abide by that. They're not aware of that. So education's important too. But on top of that, it's behavior change happens over time. So imagine this. People that are around now know it's not okay to smoke in hospitals. But back in the day, it was. So it was a while before that became a normalized behavior. So that's kind of what policy change does, is it over time becomes a normalized behavior. But it's over time. So you got to see the big picture.
Right. Is there a website or anything that you want to pass on before I have any more questions?
It's hard to pass on because I wear so many hats, a specific one. But my only message is that we really need youth to be involved in things. It's really important. I know that I'm part of many coalitions and other community projects, and it's always a hard time to get youth involved in stuff, and they're really important and vital to a lot of projects and policy changes. So just get involved, get active, and try your best to become educated on what's going on, especially in this current political climate.
So you also brought up besides Prop 99, you brought up Prop 56.
Prop 56 was the recent tobacco tax last year.
Okay.
So it raised it $2 more.
And that's statewide?
It's just statewide, yeah. It's okay. Only statewide. Other states run their own tobacco tax. Some don't have it. Some have it higher. Like New York's really high. But California's somewhere in the middle. We were really low before. We were like below a lot of even the southern states. And then with Prop 56, we've kind of raised up. And our tobacco control report comes out every year. It grades all the local counties and cities. And because of Prop 56 and the tobacco age of 21 going up, it actually made us have a better grade in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that... And we got numbers from each county. How's Butte County doing?
Not very good. Not very good at all. But that's changing. We have a very great groups here that we do collaborative work with that are working in every city. So like I said, Butte County Public Health works in Chico. The American Lung Association works in Paradise. And California Health Collaborative works in Orville. And they're all trying to get tobacco retail licensing on the docket.
Okay. And you also brought up the Clean Parks Act or non-smoking parks
in the parks, yeah. Okay. So that's something we're also trying to pass in Orville. We do a lot of policy. So basically my whole job is just to get policies passed that will help the community, whether they think it does or not.
Is smokeless tobacco a problem in Butte County?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Chew, yes, especially in Orville and Paradise.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely a problem. Hmm. Yeah.
And that obviously goes into the youth demographic as well.
It does. Yeah. They get targeted young. If you go to high schools, I know in Orville they did a photo voice project, and there was a lot of pictures of like empty chew cans at the high school, like all around, just in Orville. So that was like shining a light on all that. That maybe a lot of times like adults don't really know the products that are available nowadays, so they're not really aware. They're like, oh, kids aren't smoking Marlboros, but they're smoking all these like flavored products and vaping and all that stuff. So it's important to, with the tobacco retail licensing, kind of regulate that. You have to have a license to alcohol, but you don't have to have one to sell tobacco. So it's super important.
Cool. Can you remind me again what CLEAN stands for and then talk about what they've been doing?
Yeah, kids leading everyone against nicotine.
Okay.
Because nicotine, we have to say nicotine now because that's what's in the e-juice that's in our vaping devices. Because it's not tobacco, it's nicotine. Mm-hmm. So that's why that kind of describes all kinds of tobacco, because all tobacco has nicotine in it, which is the addictive product of it. Well, there's other chemicals too, but that's the addiction. That's where that stems from.
Okay.
And what they're doing right now, so they're working, since they're in Chico, this is only Chico, they work on tobacco retail licensing in Chico. So they partner with Butte County Public Health, and they're like subcontracted out, to help out. And right now what we're doing is we're trying to, they're doing a photo voice project as well. So that's happening. And then they also do research on city council members to kind of see what if they would be willing to talk about this. And actually last year we took them to visit with Ann Schwab, and she's a city council member. Okay. And they had a private meeting with her. Not a private, but we all met with her and kind of just like brought to the attention what's going on and see what her support level was going to be.
Okay. And how's the support on the council as a whole? And is there any specific city ordinances
that I don't know how political on? I can get right now. It's cool. It's hard to talk about right now because there's a lot going on. And I know they're currently trying to get meetings with people, and I don't really want to talk more about that just because that's what's going on with my fellow Tobacco Coalition members.
Sure. Okay.
But I know that the political climate has been a very big hindrance, especially in Orville. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, and so, the election is this year.
Yeah. Especially right. If you want to, I'll do a plug for, this is just fellow tobacco stuff. I don't work, not with one of my jobs, but in Orville, there's a city council meeting on Tuesday at 6 p.m., I believe, and they're going to be working on getting some policies passed. So we need youth there. We really need youth.
Youth next week, Tuesday in Orville. What time?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock at the city council meeting. So definitely get there if you're a youth in Oroville. I'm going to read an underwriter, and then we'll let Moses and Blake talk with Michelle if they have any questions they
I just
want
to say thank you for your service, and I appreciate it, because the youth are a huge driver in the economy for tobacco products, and they are heavily targeted. Yeah, and being at Chico State, I see a lot of students smoke on campus, even though they just recently, I think last year, passed that there's a no smoking policy on campus. So I've seen students chew in class too, and it's pretty gross because you sit next to them, but yeah, it's definitely a concern.
They spit into the cup.
And, I mean, that's more of just like a social norm that needs to be, hurdled over. But yeah, I appreciate all the work that you and your coalition do.
Thank you.
Prevent people from consuming nicotine.
And I want to say thank you too for the work you do in Paradise, because chew is definitely a deeply entrenched tradition there. I've seen living there for 20 years. Yeah, thank you for covering those hills.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we'll tread some ground here.
All right. And that segment of Youth for Justice was made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Art Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero and Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festivals and events, including Arttober, the True North Tour, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and many more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by the Zeppelin Works, specializing in Volkswagen, BMW, Porsche, Audi, Volvo, and Mercedes since 1981. The Zeppelin Works is a full-service repair facility providing technical expertise for any European automotive problems or maintenance. More information can be found by calling 530-893-0757. That again was 530-893-0757. Or you can find them online at zeppelinworks.com. That's ZEPPELINWORKS.com. All right. And if you're enjoying this program, you can go now to KZFR.org and tip this show. Back to Michelle Mori. Did you have anything else to talk about today?
Just hoping. Should I mention rants lead the conversation?
You should.
Okay, cool. So I hope to maybe be a more regular person on the show. Maybe not talking about tobacco always, although that is my job. I have a lot more interests within the community, and especially with local elections, which are coming up. So local elections matter is kind of my point of a rant. And rants lead to conversation is basically just you go on a rant. You ever ranted at someone and then it led to a conversation? I know, meeting my good friend Bill here, the first time we met, I ranted about homelessness. And then we led to a really awesome conversation about getting involved and everything. So, yeah.
I'm down.
Good.
Can't wait to hear that.
Down like a clown.
Always.
Always.
All right. Anything else about tobacco that you all can think about? All right.
Other than don't smoke tobacco, and don't consume nicotine, it's just not good for you.
I have one more point. Yeah. It's also, we're not against smokers and smoking. It's against big tobacco industry and the corruption of it. That's something I want to drive there, that it's not against smokers. You're not a bad person if you smoke. It's just when you target youth, it's not a consensual decision, because when you're youth, you're so susceptible to advertising and all these products, and your brain's still developing, so you're more prone to addiction of tobacco and other products, but specifically nicotine's one of the most addictive products in the world. So, yeah. You're nodding your head, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they can't see that.
You can't see that, sure. Isaac. It's okay. I got what you meant.
Cool. I actually have a question.
Yeah.
I have a data question.
Mm-hmm.
Does your organization look at school discipline records? Because in those records, they break it down by citation,
mm-hmm.
and you can look at which schools have the highest citations in tobacco
mm-hmm.
or possessing nicotine products. I think that's what it's actually called.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if your organization uses that data?
I know we are currently enacting a new thing in Chico Unified School District where they have hired a really awesome doctor that comes in and he does like a one-on-one counseling session with students that get caught with alcohol, drugs, or tobacco. And that's a new thing. And I was doing the evaluations for it, and it seems like the students were very receptive to actually having someone that wanted to talk about it afterwards and talk about like alternatives and how to deal with it than just showing them like this is bad, because I don't feel like that's something that works, is if you just tell kids like don't do it, it's bad. It's more so you have to give like alternatives to why you shouldn't do it and how to like cope with stress or something else in a healthier way. So that's something that I know is happening. See, rants lead to conversations.
You've looked at the data on that kind of thing.
Oh, that's true.
I was like, you know this more than I do.
I think this is a good segue.
Yeah.
The next segment.
I think he was trying to hit hint. Let's let him talk now.
So why don't we get into that? This is Moses Salgado, the co-host of Youth for Justice on KZFR, 6 p.m., first Thursday of every month. I'm here with Blake Hollingsworth, and we're here to talk about school discipline and school segregation. These are pretty concerning topics for the community, though they're often overshadowed or overlooked by other political issues or other issues that just take up our daily cognitive thinking. So why don't we get into this? Blake Hollingsworth, why don't you talk about school discipline?
It's actually school segregation today.
School segregation, yeah. Let's do the school segregation one.
So that's always a awkward subject. So how I started doing this was I was curious about school discipline initially, but all the data is kind of bundled together. So my curiosity bled over into other areas. So I started to look at the demographics of each individual school in Butte County, but especially in the Chico Unified School District. And I noticed that you had a couple of very affluent white schools, and you had a couple of very impoverished schools with high degrees of diversity. And let me define affluence real quick, because the schools don't ask the parents, are you rich? Are you poor? So how I measured affluence was what percentage of the parents had a college education and what percentage of the parents were eligible for free or reduced lunch. And I used those two metrics as a proxy for affluence. And what I discovered was in Chico, in the Chapmantown and Barber neighborhoods, South Chico, you have a school called Chapman Elementary, which is nearly 6% students of color. And then you have 5 minutes down the street, Chico Country Day, which has around 20% students of color. And it's so interesting how these two schools are essentially in the same neighborhood, but have such stark demographics. And if you look at the socionomics, it's just as stark. You have Chico Country Day, which has 6% of the parents have a college education, a bachelor's degree or higher. And then the data I looked at, 2015, you have Chapman Elementary, which had 0% of the parents with a college degree or higher. I was curious why there was such a stark difference between these two schools who are in walking distance of each other. And so I started to look a little into that, but I also noticed there's other similar patterns. You have a school called McManus in Northside Chico, close to the Cinemark in Chico for some geography. And then you have another school called Wildflower, and they had a very similar pattern, with Wildflower being very affluent, very white, and McManus being more diverse, more impoverished. And I was curious why these
trends, if you will,
trends existed. Thank you. And what I discovered was the affluent white schools tended, actually were essentially all charter schools, while the more impoverished schools and more diverse schools were just the public neighborhood schools. And this is where the awkward thing comes into play. I know a lot of the parents that send their kids to these schools, to Wildflower, to Chico Country Day. They're good friends of mine. And I know they're very progressive, open-minded. Quite a few of them are passionate about racial justice and making the places they work at a more inclusive space. But when you look at the schools their children go to, it's interesting.
Yeah. So let's touch on this subject for a second here. So we got schools who are affluent and majority white, and we have schools that are impoverished and majority colored. And you know, a lot of all these people are colleagues or friends of yours who send their students to these affluent schools, but they're also concerned with racial justice and many other progressive issues, but their actions don't reflect their words. So it leaves you in this strange, you know, paradox of how to approach this issue and how to bring it up in a way that doesn't offend people but still gets to the essence of there's an issue here in Chico. And I'm sure that this issue is spread all across the United States, but just isn't focused on. And so, you know, my question is, how do we bring this to the attention of the people who can change it? And what do we do to integrate these schools? Because I've read this and I've heard it in many different places, that segregation is worse today than it was before the Civil Rights Act. And that, you know, the fact of the matter is that segregation hasn't ended, and it's only gotten worse in America. And how do we approach this issue?
Well, I just want to clarify something. There's this paradox and exists. You have these very progressive, very passionate parents, but part of it is they just don't know. These charter schools are kind of their own insulated communities. They kind of exist in a bubble. I don't think the parents are looking at education data all night. So they're probably unaware of how unusually white and affluent their schools are. And fixing it is a difficult challenge, because the selling point for a charter is a kind of legacy system. So I went to a charter school called Children's Community Charter School, located in Paradise. And I was able to get in because I got preference because my siblings went there. And that's the big selling point of a charter school, is keeping your children together at the same school and having them progress with the same kids every grade too. That's another selling point. So they move on with each passing grade in their cohort. But those two perks unintentionally create a exclusive system, because these charter schools tend to be founded by a certain group of families who tend to be friends with people similar to them, affluent, well-educated, some typically white. So when they start these schools, as time goes on, they remain affluent and white because the children that are being admitted tend to be the younger siblings of the children who were there at the very beginning. One way to fix this, because one issue with charter schools is there are less, it varies from school to school. Some schools spend more money on this, but they're less known about. You could fix that with marketing, but I think the best way to fix that is to integrate each charter school's lottery system into a wider school district lottery system.
So the current way the charter school system works with getting students to be enrolled in the school is that it's a lottery system. So it's first come first, or it's based off random choosings.
Yes, with the exception of preference for siblings.
Preference for siblings. Okay. And currently the current, I guess, marketing for the lottery system is within the local community, or like a specific mile radius around that particular charter school.
Yes.
Okay.
So how it works in Chico is each charter school's lottery system gives second preference to people who live in that school attendance area.
Okay. And I also know that with other schools, like public schools, is that the funding for the school comes from the, correct me if I'm wrong, but the housing tax, the mortgage taxes of the surrounding houses, right?
Or is that wrong? So no, that actually stopped in, I believe, 1978.
Okay.
So what happened was, I don't remember all the years in court cases, but what happened was the California Supreme Court decided that it was, what's the word I'm looking for? I want to use this word for now. It was unjust to base the school funding system on real estate.
Okay.
Because that will create an unequal education system.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Poor neighborhoods will have poorer schools. Mm-hmm.
So what it did was it essentially statified the real estate tax revenue. It forced the state to take responsibility for it. So all that money went into the state's hands, and the state had to distribute it to each district based on need. But shortly afterwards, the real estate tax got gutted, essentially. So now our education is funded by various propositions and memes. Real estate's declined significantly in influence.
Okay. So the solution for one solution for the charter school issue of segregation is to expand the lottery system to the whole entire unified school district, wherever that may be. So it gives more students the opportunity to be able to be enrolled in those charter schools and not sent to a public school where there's less funding. Mm-hmm. And they're, and it's majority college students.
Yes, that's one method. But that method has challenges. It requires a certain amount of resources and technical know-how to implement. And I'm not sure the district really has the resources to pull this off at the moment. Another issue with this solution or method is with every lottery system, there's a way to game it. There's different variables at play that people can exploit. And the people more likely to be able to exploit the system are probably the ones who have access to more resources or the leisure to do more research.
Totally. And the parents of the students at the schools with majority minority students don't have those resources or that influence to be able to navigate that situation and impose influence upon the city council or the unified school district. Yes. To make these policies come to light.
I'm sure for a lot of these parents, they trust their local school. because these public schools aren't, let me put this out there right now, these public schools are doing an amazing job with the challenge they're tasked with. Because when you're Chico Country Day, your students, your audience is essentially homogenous. But if you're Chapman Elementary, you have to try and teach kids who don't have a home to go back to. They have to go back to the tourist shelter. You have to teach migrant children. You have to teach a lot of students with disabilities, because 18% of Chapman students have a disability. And if you look at over at Chico Country Today, I believe it was around 5 or 6%. So people tend to think public schools are bad, but that's not the case at all. They just have a much greater challenge to deal with than the charter schools, because the charter schools get to pick their students. Public schools take everyone who wants it, an education. Like, it's totally open access.
Totally. All right, so we're going to go to an underwrite for a second and just take a quick break. So this is KZFR Youth for Justice, the first Thursday of every month. And this program was made available by, is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Blazin' J's, Chico's oldest smoke shop since 1998. Blazin' J's features Blaze One clothing, Blaze One glass, glass repairs, vaporizers, e-liquid, and detox products. Blazin' J's has got you covered with four locations: Chico on the corner of 9th and Salem, Orville at 695 Oro Dam Boulevard East, Paradise at 6226 Skyway, and Grass Valley at 114 BE and Main Street, and by Baird Roofing Company, serving Butte County for more than 30 years. Baird Roofing specializes in re-roofing residential and commercial structures, along with new roof construction. For a whole new roof or a whole new roof is their slogan. Stop in at 11025 Midway or call 342-1631. That's 342-1631. Or visit bairdroofing.co.com. That's BairdRoofingCo.com. And once again, just appreciate Blazin' J's and Baird Roofing Company for contributing to the KZFR and making this program possible. So back to it. If you would like to take over.
Okay. This is Isaac Hempseed. Blaze One. All right. So we just got a educator into the studio to chat with Blake a little about his statistics. So welcome.
Thank you very much. So my name is Dina Capsalis, and I am the principal of Honey Run Academy in Paradise Unified School District, which is a community day school, which is code for schools that serve disenfranchised, homeless, expelled, probation referred, and otherwise expelled students in Paradise Unified School District. So that's from Lower Paradise all the way up through Sterling City. We consider ourselves sort of one part emergency room and one part Statue of Liberty, and sometimes trauma unit, because a lot of the students that we serve have not been successful in other settings. And so our job is to stabilize them, help them with school reentry support, and then get them off to a more comprehensive environment.
Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
So we were just talking to Blake about the racial disparities within Butte County's education system. And I wonder if Blake has any info on that, or on your specific school, or if they're, because it's a special type of school, maybe.
Well, Paradise Unified has a lot of economic diversity, not much racial diversity or ethnic diversity, which is interesting because a lot of the work that we're doing in Paradise Unified, I think, reflects a lot of the work that folks are doing in a lot of communities, rural and otherwise, in supporting students and families who have less access and who are experiencing big numbers in terms of addiction issues, mental health issues, homelessness, and also just the lack of success in school. So we, you know, we have a lot of new information out. I'm sure you guys have probably talked about ACEs and adverse childhood experiences and the study on how that impacts student learning and what that data shows. And it shows, you know, in California that Butte County is number one in adverse childhood experiences. So that, and it's across all ethnic and also economic stratas. So that changes the way we do business and the way we have to do business at school. So in terms of Paradise, and with the work that you're doing, Blake, with in terms of, you know, disproportionate numbers of students in one school or another, in Paradise it's more economic. And the Upper Ridge above the reservoir is where we have students who have high numbers of free and reduced lunch. So 70-80%. At Honey Run Academy, we're 100% free and reduced.
Wow. What does that compare to, like, Chico schools? You were saying...
Well, if I remember correctly, the school with the highest number of students eligible for free or reduced lunch was Citrus Avenue, which was around, I believe, 78%. Mm-hmm. So to give you a contrast there.
Right. So, and we also look at other unduplicated types of students. So we disaggregate out, for example, homeless students, students who are in foster care, students who are receiving free and reduced lunch. So there are all these different categories that we look at and that we hold ourselves accountable to when we're looking at student data. So in terms of Chico, you know, Chico is a little bit more affluent community than Paradise as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so... You know, even though there's not a lot of ethnic diversity in Paradise, certainly there's, you know, a lot of, like I said, economic diversity.
One of the things I've noticed about Paradise is it has an unusually high number of foster youth.
Mm-hmm, because of the group homes, yeah. We have, we just reduced from 4 to 3. We have 3 group homes, 2 girl group homes, and 2 young men group homes, or in 1 young man group home through Youth for Change. And... so we serve all of those students as well.
So you weren't here earlier. I work up in Paradise.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. You weren't here earlier. So we do tobacco policy change and education up in Paradise.
Uh-huh, TUPE. Mm-hmm. Are you part of the TUPE grant?
Or? I am in Chico, but I work for the American Lung Association.
Got it.
As well.
Okay.
I've actually come to your school. Mm-hmm. I've done a tobacco education lesson mm-hmm. there, and your students were awesome.
Thank you.
They were the most interactive of any of the high schools I went to up there, because I went to Ridgeview, Honey Run, and Paradise High.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And your students were very engaged, and they wanted to learn more.
Yeah, they're living it.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, it was like a little plug. We're actually trying to get students like that to do like a focus group. So I was talking about before you got on about how Paradise is hard to get youth involved in things.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get. We've been working up there for a couple of years now, and it's very hard to get youth involved in things. And I was talking about not only is, if they're not interested in tobacco, it's more so they learn skills on how to have a voice and advocate for things and mm-hmm. have leadership. And we train them on how to do all this cool stuff. But right now, we really want to get, like, a group of kids that are living it and mm-hmm. come and, like, do a group with them and be like, hey, like, we want to hear your perspective. We're going to city town council in Paradise.
Town council,
town
yeah.
council, mm-hmm. and we want to hear your story. We want to bring it to them and bring all this data, like, what you experience personally mm-hmm. with that. So that's a big thing we're trying to do right now.
Yeah, I think, and that's fantastic, because I think the youth voice is... you know, always the missing component. Well, you know, and we have the motto at our school anyway, don't do anything about me without me.
Yeah.
The problem in Paradise and Paradise Unified School District, so that's Paradise, Lower Paradise, all the way up to Sterling City, is access. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the programs that come to us, behavioral health is an example of that, come to us from through the urban lens in terms of application and in terms of access and modeling. And so we have to relook at, in Paradise, our programming and the way we provide access for students and families through the rural lens, mm-hmm. because they can't get to the town council meeting, which is on Lower Skyway,
just talking about that.
When in fact they're in Sterling City without a vehicle.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how do you do that? And rural communities are experiencing the littles, we call them the littles, the little tiny districts in Butte County, Golden Feather and Berry Creek. You know, family participation and parent involvement is one of the key components that we're evaluated on now in the state of California. And yet it's hard to get people into a community conversation because they chose a rural living environment for a reason. They don't want to get together. So to assume that everybody wants to be part of a community conversation, I think that's looking through the wrong lens. And so it's how you access those students, and we always feel that you access them through school.
Yeah, that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. did you read that article that says rural cities are the new inner cities?
The Wall Street Journal article last April. In fact, I have it on my wall because that is the new reality. Mm-hmm. Rural America is the new inner city when it comes to teenage pregnancy, people on disability, high school dropout rates. All the indicators show us that rural America is the new inner city in so many ways. Yeah,
so many ways. We talk about that all the time in our coalition, everything, because rural cities just don't get the help either, and we're all lumped together, like all North State is just one big conglomerate.
Mm-hmm. And the social justice communities are really looking at that because, you know, there's no longer the option of looking at these issues as racial issues. You know, rural communities, you know, in the Northern California rural, you know, the collaboratives that are evolving and being developed are speaking to that issue.
I really appreciate all the knowledge and information you guys are sharing with us. It's very educational, and it's, you know, it's important that
we're educators.
And it's essential that we hear this and that the community can hear this. And I'll segue that into a more official statement is that, you know, as a disclaimer, the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or its volunteers. But nonetheless, we absolutely appreciate everything you guys shared with us. And we're glad to have you guys on the show.
Thank
you for being here.
Yeah, thank you all. I'm going to read one more underwriter. Youth for Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Printed Image, specializing in custom screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. Using the latest technology in their state-of-the-art building, the Printed Image provides custom screen printing, embroidery, and promotional products for business, organizations, or special events. For custom apparel and promotional products, the Printed Image has dedicated specialists providing quality service, quick turnaround, and memorable products. Call 530-898-9525 or visit printedimagechico.com. That number again was 898-898. I'm sorry, I'll repeat that. 530-898-9525 or visit printedimagechico.com. All right. Also, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Well, since we got about 7 more minutes until the Beetle Nation comes in here, are there any final thoughts that we have on the topics introduced today?
I think we do a quick recap of what was discussed, unless anyone has anything else new to share. That'd be much appreciated.
I have a question for Blake, actually. So what do you think of a chief charter school up in Paradise?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Because I know a lot of people that go there.
Yeah,
I've been looking into that. I will admit, very ignorant on facts about charter schools, so I like all your information.
So, like mentioned earlier, there isn't a lot of racial inequities, primarily because there isn't a lot of diversity in Paradise. Mm-hmm. But there is some socioeconomic desegregation. Not nearly as bad as Chico, primarily because Paradise is just a very impoverished community. But if you look at the two most affluent schools in Paradise, they are at the very top, Achieve Charter. And
Paradise Charter Middle School.
Yeah. Oh,
is that a new one?
Seventh-day Adventist School.
That's private.
Oh.
Gotcha. And Children's Community Charter School.
Okay. Charter schools, gotcha.
I have a question, Blake, for you.
I'm only looking at elementary data, by the way.
Oh, okay. Got it. So Paradise Charter Middle School is a middle school 6 through 8.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So very good. That makes sense. Question for you. We chatted a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago about some research that you were doing, drilling down into some of the Chico Unified School District minutes over the course of many years. And I was just wondering, and we were talking briefly about the closure of Oakdale Elementary, which is now where Chico Country Day is, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the Chico Country Day started out across town and behind a paint shop, right, over on Cohasset, mm-hmm. and then moved when the district moved Fairview to where Jay Partridge was and then closed Jay Partridge. Oakdale Elementary was a very, very old Chico Unified School that was on that site, and it was closed in the 70s, and it was not closed during a time of declining enrollment. And so I'm just wondering where you are now and sort of looking through some of the minutes from when that closure was made.
So I've actually been working on So I've been unfortunately unable to follow up on that line of research because I've been working on developing a volunteer research program at the Chico Peace and Justice Center to look into stuff like that for me.
Ah, very good.
So I'm trying to get more people to look into these matters.
Mm-hmm.
And we recently got a new volunteer who's volunteered to look at the old minutes of the Chico Unified School District from 1970 to 1990.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Yeah, it would be great to hear or see that published in some way or another for a broad and sort of thorough perspective on the evolution of Chico schools in terms of some of the racial division and the way that schools have been sort of gerrymandered and the way districts have been created based on, you know, especially racial demographics in the city of Chico.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of Citrus Avenue, which used to be a very white school district.
Mm-hmm.
But that district's diversity slowly started to creep up. And then suddenly, Emma Wilson opened up, and I believe it was 92. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the diversity went way up. And Emma Wilson initially was a very, very white school. And I believe a lot of that has to do with how the school attendance area was drawn at the
exactly,
time.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
This is a fascinating topic of discussion.
Very curious because Oakdale Elementary is in Barber Yard neighborhood, and it was the school for Barber Yard students. I live in Barber Yard. And so when we moved into Barber Yard, when my then now 21-year-old was 3, we wanted to know what neighborhood school would he go to. Well, there was no neighborhood school. That neighborhood school was closed. And so we were told by Chico Unified, so he would then, his neighborhood school is Rosedale Elementary, which, you know, if you're an 8-year-old on a bicycle, it's challenging to get across, you know, 3 busy roads to get to school, right?
And it's located across College Town, which is...
Right. And yet Chapman, as the crow flies... is much, you know, more accessible and is closer. So that was a curious decision about Barber Yard. And then also just the closure of Oakdale Elementary, I thought was I've always wanted to know that. And I have heard from past educators and teachers there at the school when it closed that there were concerns among the community of educators at the time that a lot of Chapman and Rosedale students were starting to make their way through that into that inner corridor of Chico Unified. And so that's why the minutes, I think, would shed a lot of interesting light on the decision to close that school. Yeah.
All right. So this is Isaac Hempstead again for Youth for Justice. So we just got a call off air from someone expressing their interest about the numbers that you were stating about specifically charter schools. This is all public information that you can get online from the county.
Oh, so one public resource you can use is DataQuest. It's a really handy, useful tool. I just downloaded the data files from the California Department of Education so I could get a more granular look at the data. But if you're a novice at data analysis, I highly recommend using DataQuest. It's a really user-friendly tool.
Okay. And all the numbers that you were looking at and using are publicly available, and they're all public charter schools. And is there private charter schools?
I'm not aware of, because they are 501c3 nonprofits.
Okay.
So their tax and their tax records are public information.
Okay. So if anyone was interested in where all this data comes from, you can definitely look it up on DataQuest. Definitely, we didn't cover every little granular detail, but it's all out there. The numbers that we were looking at with racial disparities and all that, you can definitely look up yourself as well. Thanks for that call. And I think that about wraps up today. Anyone else have any little quip before Beetle Nation gets in here?
I'll say something. I'm sorry for stealing the mic again. I just want to stress, and I know I talked about it a lot in the beginning, but since it was a little while ago, youth are super important. Use your voices. Make your voices heard. There's so many organizations within Butte County that want your help and support. There's so many things to get involved with, and just do it. I know if you're thinking about it, just do it. It's important. That's my final words for you guys. And local elections matter.
Thank you, Michelle.
I just wanted to thank all the guests on the show for today. I appreciate you guys' input and information to educate the public and our viewers. And we have many interesting topics of discussion coming up for the next month and the following months. And I look forward to having more of you guys back on the show again. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome, yeah.
And I want to thank KCFR for having us.
Yes, that's what I like to say too. Ditto.
This is the co-host, Moses Salgado, on Youth.